Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're at State Fair in Gainesville. I ate all the food, Don Mohler.
Pretty good food, isn't it?
It was pretty phenomenal food, but I ate it all. And so this week, this is episode 2, volume 3. What do you want? How are we going to do this?
I think this must be episode 2, chapter 1. We'll figure all of that out.
Well, I want you to talk about Dr. Malia Cromer because, pollster comes to me, right? I mean, that's what what do they call me? I want them to say pundit, but they're like, they give me a lot of, if they have to describe me in one word, but pollster, but much more than that, educator. And you're here today to tell us how these elections sort of the ebbs and the flows. And what is the science of pollsterism,
sure.
Right?
Yes, sure.
That's what we're here for.
Well, and I warned Malia when we reached out to her and asked her if she would come on to Baltimore Positive. I said, this is going to be really entertaining because my partner in this effort, Nestor Aparicio, is a non-believer. I said, he doesn't believe in polling. And by the end of the podcast, you're going to have converted him.
Ooh, look at this. She's going to tell me polling is science. Wow. All right. Well,
but before
it is science?
It's absolutely science.
Wow. Cool.
Listen, wait a minute, Malia. One second.
You know what? It's after you know everything is when you really begin to learn.
Okay.
So this is where I'm ready to go. This is where I'm ready
before
to put on.
Before we jump into polling, let's have Malia tell us a little bit. Shameless self-promotion of Goucher. Tell us a little bit about Goucher College, which is where you come from in the Goucher poll.
So Goucher College is a beautiful small liberal arts college in Baltimore County, Maryland. We have mandatory study abroad. That's one of our signature programs. And we also we have a really heavy focus on student-faculty interaction. We have small class sizes. We have students who are really engaged in the community. We have students who go on, I think, to try to make the world a better place. And most importantly, at least for me, we have a public opinion center on the campus. And so what's, I think, really interesting, we're a small campus, but we actually have a fully functioning survey research center. And so when you get the Goucher poll, what you're getting is something we have produced right here in Baltimore County.
So I guess I have so many questions about this and polling and all of that. But you talk about Goucher. I broadcast from Towson for 3-4 years in that area, Towson and Goucher and the universities. And we talk about UMBC. And more than anything, the value of college and science and learning and all
sure.
of that. So for a guy who is a bit flat earth about the science of this, right, for me, because you're laughing at me, so clearly I need to be educated on this. I've never taken it seriously because in my industry, Arbitron has affected every nickel I've ever made, which is zero, from this thing they called science that they portrayed as science to
sure.
an entire industry for literally billions of dollars that were spent in the ad industry. And I've done this for 30 years, and Arbitron for 30 years says no one has ever listened to my voice on radio in Baltimore. And that literally, their science would tell you I have zero listeners ever. And
okay.
I've endured that for 21 years as a radio owner because I don't pay them.
Okay.
I call it mafia money. They call it the subscription fee to subscribe to the, as what President Trump would call, the numbers. They got to look at the numbers. So we did all of that,
sure.
you know, back. So I have fought that battle my whole life in an industry that is a pay-for-play. I subscribe, then I tell you, you have a one-share, two-share of 18 to 35 of men, of this, of that. And they literally, the science was mailing an envelope with a dollar bill and a diary. That went on mm-hmm. until the digital age became. And then when the digital age came, I said, wow, they have this thing called .net, which is where I, in 2006, went that way. And now when I see the Google Analytics and I see, I don't believe that because I've been to too many conventions where all of the Google Analytics have been rigged as to say how many page views, how many eyeballs, because mm-hmm. that's what they're selling. So I've been in that industry of selling that for all these years, and I know how flawed it is. So I don't think everything's flawed, but I think anything where you say, we talked to 2,000 of this, or it's like Family Feud. We talked to 100 people.
But it's not like Family Feud.
No, here
not.
We go.
So here we go. So this is where it's
but
good.
But okay. it's not
and
like
I knew
Family
this was going to be fun.
I'm a layman about
and
this.
Guess,
I'm not a scientist
about this.
You know?
So foremost, I think that you're conflating a couple different things. You're conflating right. the type of, perhaps the market research that underlies, that rate readings with specifically the types of public opinion polling that I do. The first thing I would ask somebody like you is, you know, have you, next time you go to get your blood taken, next time you get a blood test, I mean, do you have them, do you ask them to take it all to be sure? Or do you ask for just a random sample, one drop of your blood to actually tell you what might be wrong with you? Or when you take it, when you have a whole entire pot of soup, do you need to eat the entire pot of soup to tell me the soup is too salty? Or do you just need one spoonful? The idea that it's 2,000 just people, it's not just 2,000 people. It's 2,000 randomly selected adults with an appropriate sampling frame. The idea of random selection is what underlies all of this research. It's not just 200 people off the street or 2,000 people. We asked 2,000 people on the street. These are sophisticated, taking the sampling frame, which is telephones for the most part. Right now, we do public opinion polling.
I hang up on you.
You okay?
I just do.
That's okay. You do, but not everybody else does. Right. And the good thing is cell phone and landline coverage covers almost the entire population of individuals. So everybody basically has a cell phone or a landline. So you are able to be opted into the sample. You may hang up, and response rates are certainly a problem. It's a problem that pollsters have been confronting. There's certainly been a decline in response rates since.
Just the fact that you're calling people on the phone, there's only a certain kind of person will take that call.
Are you sure?
Well, I know I'm not that kind of person.
Okay, so you're not that type of person, but are you representative?
Well, then you've lost me. Then you've lost people like me.
Are you sure? So are you sure that you represent people at large? So what is it about you that's so special that it didn't get opted in?
I'm the kind of guy that won't take your phone call.
Are you the kind? Okay, so what does that mean? Are you demographically specific in that way? So what is it about you, the type of guy who won't take a phone call, that is just not representative of the population at large? And so that's the problem. So just because you've never taken a poll, and just because your friends have never taken a poll, clearly people are taking polls. And as much flack as we get from 2016, nobody wants to talk about 2018 when all the polls were right and they correctly predicted the blue wave. So tell me then, how is it possible that nearly every single election cycle, and you know, and just because in 2016 that the polls were off in a few different states, but correctly predicted again the national vote. So, are we just getting lucky?
Well, Malia,
that's the fundamental question.
Well, so the Nate Silver side of this, and back in 2016, where did you stand? I don't even know. I mean, in 2016. It was very clear the morning we woke up Hillary was going to win Maryland, right? So, like, the notion that there was anything predictive about that. But, like, even
in the case of Larry Hogan winning the first time,
that was something I think that was not easily predicted, right? Even when Ehrlich won here, those Republicans ever winning here the early part of my lifetime was... But now I think you can go to Sparrow's Point and be pretty predictive of what you're going to get or what you're going to get in Harford County to some degree.
Well, why is that? Why is it predictive then? I'm just curious. So my question
is, I walk around the Heritage Fair. You know, I mean, that would be...
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess so the fundamental question is then, if not for pollsters, then who gets to tell us what the pulse of the people is? The pundits?
Oh, I'm not anti-pollster. I take it more grain of salt than gallon of fluid. You know what I mean? Like, literally, I mean, I take my science as gospel. Yeah. I take the poll as informative, right? Like, I'm not. I don't think they shouldn't be done. I'm all for hearing it. I just don't take it as seriously as a gospel.
And neither do pollsters take it as a gospel either.
Well, that's good to know.
So if we think about a typical poll has a 95% a 95% confidence interval that I'm 95% sure that if I took a poll 100 times, 95 out of 100, we would get similar results, plus or minus whatever that margin of error is. And so let's go back to 2016. And so if you start to look at what the public opinion polls look like in Wisconsin, in Pennsylvania, in Florida, where the biggest sort of key misses were, if you start to track what the polls look like over time, and particularly post the Comey event, they start to narrow, and they narrowed, and they narrowed. And they narrowed so much, for most part, they start to get within that margin of error. And if anybody will ever tell you, if there's a neck-and-neck race, both a 49 and 51, right, and the margin of error is 4%, it is statistically, you cannot distinguish those two candidates from one another. Only when they're outside the margin of error can you really say somebody's up or down. And I actually do think there's too much of a focus on the horse race and not enough focus on these individual policy issues that pollsters should really be focusing on. And so I hear the criticism of focusing on the up and down the horse race of public opinion polls and perhaps how that might change how people think about the elections. But I'll give you an example. This last Patrick Gonzalez just put out a new poll on Baltimore City. And it was a handful of candidates. Not everybody who's even declared, who's even thinking about running was included. Everybody focused on that head-to-head when they should have been focusing on the really interesting right track, wrong direction of Baltimore, or the question of whether Catherine Pugh should have resigned. Only 65% of Baltimoreans said that Catherine Pugh should have resigned, but I bet if you talked to your random man on the street, you'd have people up in arms, oh, mm-hmm. she should have resigned. But only 65% of Baltimoreans said that she should have. I'm not saying that's right or wrong.
Malia, what is that disconnect? That's an interesting point that you just said. Where does that disconnect come from? Because I hadn't even thought about what you just said until this very moment, that in that poll, 65%
sure.
of Baltimore City residents said the mayor should not have resigned.
No, should have resigned.
But
that's still a big...
That's 35% that said, hey, she's fine.
She's fine.
Yeah. Or they didn't know. That's right. And so that is a key disconnect to it. And that's what I think what's frustrating for people who are trying to scientifically study a mass opinion is that all of a sudden, you know, you miss one election. There's this high profile miss, and all of a sudden it's undercut. The whole industry's undercut. And nobody believes the polls anymore. But yet, if you turn to Twitter, it seemed that everybody was begging for her to resign. And my sort of underlying question is: in the absence of scientific measurement of public opinion, do you actually know where the public is at? And so it's important.
In the absence of science, but you believe this is science?
It's absolutely so.
Because it's within 4%.
It's a sampling. It's central limit theorem. It's statistical analysis. It absolutely is. It's a random sample of individuals. Again, these aren't just people picked off the street with a little survey. Scientific public opinion polls are drawing an appropriate sample using an appropriate sample frame of the population of interest. And so, but again, what pollsters really get upset about is the pseudoscience and the pseudo polls out there. The stuff that gets put up on a website, you know, we're asking our readers.
Yeah, I ask my Twitter followers,
Let's talk about that.
Okay, let's reset real quick. Don Moeller here, former Baltimore County Executive. We're in Catonsville. We're at State Fair. The food is delish. I have a picture of the food. That's what I ate there this morning. But Dr. Malia Cromer's here from Goucher. Just as you were. Go ahead.
Yeah. Because I want to really break this down
sure.
for folks who are listening or watching, and about sample size. And
sure.
it's easy to make it sound, you know, way complicated for folks. When I think, if I remember correctly, Gallup was one of the first ones to really
yes.
begin to think of it as terms of differently than a straw poll, right?
Yes.
Begin to break down. We had to find groups that were representative. When you go about this at Goucher and at the Sarah T. Hughes Center,
mm-hmm.
we'll talk about later in the show. Interesting. I looked up. I thought, Sarah T. Hughes, she's got to be someone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, we won't share it now. It's a little tease. You will even know who she was.
Don's got notes.
When we tell you, we'll know who she was. But talk to us about, you survey all over Maryland.
Yes.
So how do you determine what is representative? Break it down for those who don't know anything about it. Say, how do I come up with representative
right.
sample?
So that is the beauty of random sampling, right? So the census gives us these really fantastic population
data. What if the census is wrong? How about that?
Okay.
Hey, right.
But we got to have some baseline.
But we had that last week,
I mean,
right?
Okay, what do you mean the census is wrong?
We had a question last week about...
We were talking about the importance of the count and all the issues related to it. But you have to have a baseline.
And this is an issue related to it. You know?
So individuals who are upset about the citizenship question on the census are right to be upset. My entire industry is upset about it. You want to make sure that you're getting the census is the definitive word.
There you go.
It's the word and what the population estimates look like. And those population estimates, by the way, are so important for any number of things. For example, this measles outbreak, all that sort of stuff is tracked by the CDC. And you know how the CDC does it? Random sampling. They do continuous health surveys of the American population, and they help target the outbreak of new diseases and emerging diseases. That's survey research right there.
And that's awesome.
Yeah, and that's
awesome.
Exactly.
So let's jump back and educate us now.
Okay.
Here you are. Somebody comes to you and they say, Malia, we want Goucher and your survey group to take a look at issue X throughout the state.
Sure.
Take take us from ground zero.
Oh, fun.
How
okay,
do you do
sure.
It?
So the Goucher poll is conducted on a dual frame stratified random sample. And when I say stratified random sample, we stratified by county. So we're taking random samples of individual counties pieced together in the proportion of which the population is distributed. So we're obviously going to get more numbers from the urban corridor than we would in Garrett County, right? And so you first start off with that sort of a random sample that looks like that has numbers that are equally distributed across the state in terms of the distribution of the population.
So your sample looks like the state in miniature.
It looks like the state. That's exactly what it's supposed
right.
to do. That's what random.
Right.
That is the purpose of random sampling, random selection. So then we call the entire week. So we'll call for 4 or 5 days. The students will call. You bring up an important point about non-response bias. It's something pollsters confront. We're lucky at Goucher College because we have live interviews who are calling from a Maryland number with a delightful college student on the other end of the phone. And so people like you are less likely to hang up on a sort of a chipper college student who's calling from a Baltimore number who say, hi, my name is Malia, and I'm a student calling from Goucher College in Baltimore County, Maryland. That's part of the science,
trained,
by the way.
I can see this, man.
That's right. And so when you say the science.
Oh, okay, give me the poll.
That's right. And so
I used to get that walk at the East Point Mall back when, you know, there was the poll, you know, people would come up with we were mall rats. We were just, and they knew not to leave us alone.
Sure.
And they weren't looking for 14-year-old kids to mall.
Right.
No,
they were not.
And my mom was like, I'm just at the mall to shop.
Right.
So all these, so this idea of like it not quote unquote being science is so ridiculous to us because we pollsters have spent the time to even isolate what type of introduction on a survey yields the highest response rate. And so we've researched everything from even online polling. So what color screen yields the highest response rate? So these are all things that we painstakingly have looked to try to correct any sort of biases for things like non-response. So we call this random sample in Marylanders. It looks like the population is at large. We have a bunch of students do the calling. They're wonderful. They do this cute little introduction. People, by and large, want to end up taking the survey. By the time we call at the end of the week, lo and behold, the survey, the sample demographics looks almost identical to Maryland does as a whole.
Now, tell people how many, what in your field,
mm-hmm.
How many do you need to yield a legitimate response to predict Marylanders?
So it depends what you mean sort of by predict. I think an industry standard, like you wouldn't want to put out a poll of Marylanders as a whole that didn't that had anything less than like a plus or minus of like, you know, 4.5% would be the highest kind of margin of error you'd want to put out there. And that's honestly just for interpretation purposes, because you want to be able to make sure that you can interpret the difference between sort of two categories where you agree or disagree or approve or disapprove. When you start to have a margin of error of more than 5%, those differences become so negligible.
It's not a poll. It's a guess at that point?
It's not that it's a guess.
It's an educated guess
but
in your mind?
It's not that it's an educated guess because there's still scientific random sampling underlying it. But in terms of interpretation, the plus or minus, like let's say it's plus or minus 5%, it goes plus or minus, and so mm-hmm. it creates a
well,
range
the plus or minus dictates the confidence level you have.
It's less,
right?
Less,
I mean,
less
it's
reliable.
It's the differences between the categories. So if you have, if 60% of individuals approve of the styrofoam ban, and you know, 50% disapprove, but I have a margin of error of, you know, of 6% on my survey, it starts to do this, right? You cannot distinguish really sort of true attitudes from one another. And that's the margin of error is anywhere, any individual sample, any individual result, how much give it has on either end. So
people are always fascinated, and I want you to go back and revisit it.
Sure.
Because not only Nestor, but others will say, and you're going to tell us what the number is.
Sure.
But I'll make it up. They'll say, Don, come on. They surveyed 700 people. How can you predict what millions of people think from 700 people? Tell us
that
how you can do
it. That is a very basic.
And I get it every single time. And a matter of fact, I get it so much that I screenshot it and I put it on my lecture notes for the students because it's like clockwork. I get this comment. They're not just 600 people. They're not just 700 people. They are 700 randomly selected adults. That's the difference. The selection is the difference. It's not just 700. It's not people at, you know, you went and talked to at a fair. It's 700 people who got selected to be in the survey. That's the underlying difference. That's how random sampling works. And again, the proof is in the pudding. So our poll talked about Governor Hogan's approval rating, and we also talked about we measured his reelection efforts. And lo and behold, it turns out that Governor Hogan one re-election in the state. I know in Maryland it really is never, you know, it's not, you know, we haven't had a lot of close elections, and the governor was up substantially on his counterpart. But how is it that they're able to predict these elections over and over and over again if the science doesn't work?
She is Dr. Malia Cromer. We're going to continue to quiz and
we're going to come back. I think we take a little break, right? And we've just wet people's appetite at this point.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts.
Is she starting to win you over? I want to know before we go to break. Is the science starting to win? Because you're a science guy.
My mind
has
been expanded. You know what I mean?
Listen, I get it. I get the skepticism of it. I absolutely do. And I mean, it's something we talk about a lot. I mean, it seems crazy, right? I guess on its face, until you start to really think that it's
no,
you get out of you stop thinking about them as like 700 people that you would see on the street and start to think about them as like 700 like randomly selected adults. When you think about the random selection mechanism, and you think about that we actually have a sampling frame, cell phones and landlines, almost has full coverage of the entire state, and we're calling or randomly selecting these individuals from these cell phones and landlines, which cover the entire state. Almost everybody has one.
So you have an equal probability to get selected
in the sample.
Because if you were looking for Don or Linda Mueller in Catonsville in 1992, they would have one home phone number,
sure,
maybe a fax number. That would be you wouldn't be able to get to the kids,
of course,
at
not.
All. You'd have to go to the mall to get to the kids, right? I mean, that's where they were hanging out, right? So if you're trying to get anybody young or go to the college campus
right.
or wherever it would be, the one thing I would say on the face of this, and just seeing technology and seeing crooked elections in Cambridge Analytica and my experience in Facebook were, do you want to buy the 21228 or do you want to buy the 21224
sure.
and targeting? And look, I've sold advertising my whole life, whether it's The Sun or Valpak or anything that's, you know, Comcast local and trying to target places. So I understand all of that, and I think it has been for wonks and nerds and scientists and Mike Elias and Sig Meidel with the Orioles, there is an absolute way more targeted way of doing this than when my dad got the Ovaltine ad, like in the Christmas Story, you know, and was filling out the Publisher's Clearinghouse
right.
sweepstakes or whatever. That this is legitimate to that point, but I always do say it's legitimate to the point of that you're only going to get people that are going to answer your questions, because anybody that's not going to answer your questions can't be involved.
Well,
anybody
but,
without a phone can't be involved.
Okay,
so
but,
those are all
the coverage, though. But he was, so who's without a phone, right? So answer me that.
I don't know. No one voting that I know of, but probably older people, maybe.
No.
I don't know. Maybe
nope.
They all have to communicate.
Sorry,
too.
No,
yeah.
No.
Right, this
no,
is lesson
sorry.
One.
They have to communicate. Yeah,
this
no.
is lesson one. Great place to take a break. Let's grab a cup of coffee.
By the way,
we're at State Fair.
We are. And Don, part of this has been, Baltimore Positive is, I never took his social studies class. Like, he stopped teaching, like, you know, classroom teaching in that way when I met him in 1982. So what this whole idea here is for Don to lay a
this
curriculum
is a lesson today for
of
you,
social
buddy.
Studies, right?
I'm just trying to stop the poll truthers out there.
This is it. Let's take a break. Come on.
I'm just here to find the good fight.
We'll be back. Let's get some eggs. Let's get some bacon.
There's no hate in the 21228. We are Baltimore Positive, WNST Towson, Baltimore, WNST.net. And we never stop talking Baltimore Positive.